Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
In this episode, your host Lewis Irons sits round the table with Scottish FA Performance Director Malky Mackay, Head of Coach Education and Development Greg Patterson, and Manchester United's Head of Academy Nick Cox. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be around the table with you again, and Nick for the first time. Guys, Malky, I'm going to start straight into this. To have someone like Nick Cox, Head of Academy at Manchester United, around the table, I think is a great privilege for us to be able to pick someone's brains like this today, isn't it?
Very much so. I've known Nick for a long time, since Watford. Nick right now is Head of Academy at Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and has given time aside in his busy schedule to come up here today. It's an absolute privilege for him to for us to have him here today. And we've had 100 of our youth coaches from our Scottish professional clubs here today, all day, listening to them, but also Nick put them into workshops and had them interacting as well. We've just finished there just now, so that, you know, the whole of Scottish football's youth coaches have been here all day working with him, and as I said, real privilege for him to give up as much of his time. He's also, we've managed to steal him overnight as well, and tomorrow morning he's going to go and have another conversation with our Scottish FA JD Performance School coaches as well, so can't thank him enough.
Yeah. Before we pick Nick's brains on this, Greg, from a coaching standpoint, to have all those guys in the room today, hearing from someone in a position like that, Nick said it himself, it's not all the right answers, everyone has their own approaches, but that is invaluable for them to listen to, isn't it?
No, absolutely is, and as Malky said there, we're lucky that he's here for 2 days and not just the one. I'd have stolen him for a third day and maybe get more coaches in to do CPD, etc. But no, absolutely, it's great to have him, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to sit in the back of the room and listen to, you know, that knowledge that Nick's imparting on the group today, and picking up things for coach education from that as well, and what in Nick's experience, you know, living and breathing stuff at the academy, with his experience, what do we then need to, you know, give extra in our coach education curriculums to help the coaches essentially hopefully go and work for Nick one day.
Well, no, one of the qualities that coaches need is hard work. Nick, you've been up since 4 a.m. this morning. Your eyes are still open at the moment, though. How's it been for you up here today?
I'm hanging in there. It's been brilliant, and the privilege was mine, really. So I think I spent the first part of today talking about my journey, how I'd learnt the things I've learnt, how I'd go about my work through the experiences I'd had at Watford and Sheffield United before now being at Manchester United. And actually, at the beginning of that, if someone had told me I'd have the opportunity to present to a national association some stuff that I know, I wouldn't have believed you. So the privilege was mine, more so as well because of the relationship between Scottish football and Manchester United. It's nice just to kind of carry on that tradition a little bit as well. So I've had a really good day, worth getting up for.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got our relationship across the table, of course, with you guys, Malky and Nick. You go way back, and you've got previous history of working together. Malky, you know this man better than anyone around the table.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a special time actually at Watford, a club that we're in the Championship, but we're really lacked money and finances running about the football club. But you know, as Nick will probably touch on, out of that sometimes, when there is a lack of money, comes, you know, a real brainstorming as to how to actually manage to get things done properly. We had a good time in terms of when you look at it, the people that all were around the club at the time. Eddie Boothroyd, who's England's under 21 manager, was the manager, followed by Brendan Rodgers. I was there, Sean Dyche was there. Mark Warburton was there at the same time. The late Dick Bate, who's a great friend of the association, was there as well. John Stevenson, who's another mentor of a lot of our coaches up here at the same time at the moment. And obviously Nick. So we were all running about there at the same time, and when you look at that amount of people that have gone on and done varying degrees of things in football, it was quite a special place. Nick will probably again go and tell you about the academy, where Harefield Academy, which was the school that was actually attached to Watford Football Club, really was the forerunner for the EPPP in England. It was the pilot scheme that then basically the Premier League lifted and you know, used the model. And Nick was massively involved in that. my job and the job of the managers at that point was to try and push as many of the academy products through into our first team as possible. We didn't have any money, so it was about X Factor loans, lower league diamonds, and a huge swathe of academy kids coming through. So there had to be a real belief through the whole football club, from directors down, that academy products would be pushed through. And with that, you need quality, and you need quality coaching. And you know, a great emphasis was placed on the coaches that were in the academy, of which Nick was kind of involved massively in for, maybe he'll tell you the amount of years. How many years was it, Nick?
12, yeah, something like along those lines.
Mark, when you started talking there, Malky, you spoke about that lack of money. Nick, you're obviously in a position now at a club like Manchester United where money is certainly not an issue, but I like what you spoke about there, Malky, and I like what you were talking about when you were addressing the coaches earlier, that when you are faced with diversity like that, there are other ways of working, and a lot of it does come to the way that you work with coaches and the quality that you work with people, and that's probably a big part of the job at that time that you shared with Malky, was it?
Yeah, so I've seen both ends of the spectrum. So yeah. Watford was, if you were to speak to anybody involved with that club at that moment in time, they would tell you that it was one of the most special and magical journeys.
Yeah.
But I'm not too sure even the supporters knew how special and magical it was. We were under the cosh. We had to come up with a plan. People had to be brave. People had to kind of stand up and be counted to deliver something that wasn't easy, just to finish mid-table in the Championship. And the outsiders would have looked at that and go, nah, so what? Inside we're going, wow, we're overachieving. And all the time you were desperate for a resource, desperate for, can we have a bit more than what we've currently got? And it isn't now until I take on a job where resource isn't an issue. You look back and you see the value in having nothing, because when you've got nothing, you become accountable, really, really creative, innovative. You only have people associated with you who are there for the love of it and who are intrinsically motivated just to do the right thing. And the environment that you create for young people when you've got nothing is about being humble and hardworking and striving and trying to overachieve. So it was amazing. It was the perfect conditions for development of staff. So Malky just listed a long list of people. They're the first ones that come to mind. There's probably a few others in there as well that are credible names. So staff development was unreal. All of us sitting around the table didn't know that what we were doing was anything other than normal. But it was amazing. And then for player development as well. I think I touched earlier today with the guys in the Pride Lab that it doesn't matter what you do in terms of trying to develop players, opportunity is the number one ingredient, and opportunity really is hard to hunt down. And we had a period of time where the club committed to opportunity, where we had a manager who said, okay, I'm prepared to be brave enough and go and front this one up on the touchline every week, put out teams of young boys, but also have to go and convince staff that this could work, just trust me, believe in me, this could work. And it was that opportunity that saw a conveyor belt of kids make debuts. And I can remember Hartlepool in the FA Cup, early January. You fielded a team with 13 in the squad and I think 9 on the pitch. We won 4-1, and that was pretty much a youth team or a team that had been your reserve team, right?
A couple of seasons
before. And then not only did those kids have a good go in that particular game, they've gone on and
for them went on to become professional
footballers and whatever. So it was a good fun more than anything, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the time it was, you know, necessity was the mother of invention at the time when we sat on the table, and it's like, we don't have the money for this, that. The owner at the time had given the chief exec the task of selling the club.
Yeah.
The sporting director, who was John Stevenson, who's a friend of ours, was given the task of selling £2 million worth of asset every year on the pitch. And my job at the time was to keep us in the division on the third lowest budget in the division. So there was this, where those three circles should not meet, but by working together and working with all our coaches and this belief that our academy could, and be brave, we all had to be that. I mean, Nick just talked about it there. We were half an hour from our administration on a wet Friday night, a dark wet December Friday night, and the bank was ready to pull it, and everyone in the office were just white sheet faces because they were losing their jobs in half an hour. And it got so close, and we teetered for 6 months. But it gives people strength of character. And as Nick said there, at the time, you just think you're doing your normal job. and it's not till you look back and think special times, special people worked hard and had, I mean, Jadon Sancho was after me, but Nick worked with him, and you know, and he brought one of the best players in Europe right through right now. So no, it was an interesting time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, Greg, when you look at that, it's when you hear these sorts of stories, it does have an effect on you. So for when you put this into a coaching perspective, yeah, you can talk about hard work and you can talk about the commitment it takes to get these sorts of results, but I guess it's really a hope that these guys can then take that forward and take that into their career.
Absolutely, and it's that phrase Malky used there, it's that, you know, necessity. Yeah. To be able to take something on. So it's all very well, you know, I often talk about being world class, and Nick spoke about being world class, and world class doesn't mean you've got the best resources, the best people, the best, yeah, best of everything. You know, world class, you can attain world class in different ways, and it's that I've spoke often on this podcast and elsewhere about trying to make our coach education provision world class, to be a world class offering, and it's taking those little nuggets. And I kind of look back on even my own experience in coach education and being quite entrepreneurial with things so that you can make things happen. You might not have the budget to stretch, but you do realise, okay, I can't bring in a full-time sports scientist, for example, but I might be able to go knock the door at a local university. Yeah. There might be people wanting internships, and trying to be, as I said, a bit entrepreneurial, Malky uses the word necessity, to try and get those people in to help you to try and attain that world class. So it's trying to be creative, necessity, entrepreneurial, whatever words we want to put on it, that hopefully the coaches that you then put in front of the likes, of Nick, it's those kind of models that you hope they pick up and then you hope they go and run with to make the game better.
Yeah. But then of course along that journey, you're going to make mistakes, aren't you, Nick? And everyone makes mistakes, and that's what I found when I was lucky enough to sit in and listen to you today. One of the first ingredients you spoke about was make mistakes, because you'll learn from them.
Essentially, if you're talking about players or coaches that you're trying to develop, you need the freedom to be able to do things on your own terms, mess them up, reflect on what you've done, fix it and put it right again. And that's important for everyone to remember. If you're working with coaches or young players, they've got to have the freedom to be able to make mistakes. It's essential in trying to achieve world-class standards, as you talk about.
Are there any points that you think of, Nick, in your career along the way where you thought that certain mistake that you've learnt from has put you on a path where you are now? To any coach listening that might be thinking, how do you learn from that?
Just loads of times. If I look back on the way that we dealt with some talented individuals, you reflect and go, I probably would do it differently if I was faced with that again. Certain kids that you put in environments that you shouldn't have done at the wrong time. A daily occurrence. Watford shaped me because I had 12 years of being held to account but being given the freedom to go and do things on my term and make loads of mistakes, have a go at all the jobs. I'm not, it'd be interesting to know from a coach education point of view, my journey probably wasn't in the best interest of the kids. I had a go at everything, drove the bus, coached all the age groups, washed the kit, held the video camera, just did everything. Now you could say what you should be striving for the kids is experts to do all of those things and for a coach to be able to focus, but for my own personal development, it made me a well-rounded
on
person.
On the flip side of that, even as a player and chatting to Lee Carsley, you know, I got on quite well with Lee, and you know, you talk about Eddie Boothroyd, you know, Eddie's assistant. So, you know, Lee talked about when he was at Coventry went into administration and all of a sudden he had to wash his own kit.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he had to make his own protein shakes. He didn't know how many grams to use, he didn't know how many millilitres of milk or whatever to use. And he said that's when the majority of his learning then happened. So to then, you know, to then that transition for Lee into a coach, he now talks about, you know, giving the kit man a day off. What do you mean? The kids are in tomorrow and I'll take the day off.
Yeah.
So the kids then come in and work out, well, where's my tie-ups? Where's my socks? Where's my, you know, work out for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that makes you more rounded people. And Nick talked about it this morning. I'm sure he'll go on about this. Nick talked about it this morning. And I think probably because of your own experiences, you're now taking that and looking at the Man United kids, like you spoke about this morning, giving them a more rounded experience, because this flat road is so, you know, there's so smooth a pathway
speed
now
bumps
for the youngsters,
you want to provide
that they don't get these areas where they have to then become resilient. Whereas I think someone who's had that experience of having to be resilient and having to trial, you know, becomes a more rounded person, then wants the younger ones to have that more roundedness about them as well. And it's a real kind of there's the pastoral care thing, but there's a holistic approach to it in terms of I want them to be able to actually handle themselves. And more these young players, if they handle themselves properly, they can make as much success off the field as they can on these days with social media. Yeah. But Nick spoke about this morning.
Of course, Nick, you went into that in depth today. Your role at Man United, you're obviously head of academy. You've been in that position for a month as head now. You've been at Man United for longer than that. You must see that in the players. You must see these challenges in your position, and for coaches dealing with these players, there is certainly a lot of challenges that are faced even at a club of that sort of stature.
Yeah, it's a really challenging journey, and our kids are starting the journey younger and younger. So in England, kids are getting into elite programs at 4 and 5, and actually at the end of the journey the challenge is harder than it's ever been before. The process of trying to be an expert at anything is really hard anyway, so it's a really tough environment. And if you're going to survive in a tough environment, you've got to be a well-rounded, robust individual that can roll with the punches. And so it's up to us to create a journey that allows kids to experience a little bit of adversity, and it allows kids to understand how to deal with setbacks. We've got to get into the habit of preparing the child for the road and not preparing the road for the child. So academies are becoming really sterile, clean, linear journeys, and we're expecting if I recruit a boy at 7, it will be a smooth pathway of success to the first team. Parents want to see their child be the best player in a winning team, playing every minute, every week. That's just one set of experiences that you need. The rest of the time, you need to be failing and playing up an age group and playing down an age group and playing against a team that's better than you and playing on a bumpy pitch and playing on a flat pitch and playing against 10 men and playing in front of a crowd and playing in the development games where the score isn't important and playing in a game where the score really is important. So our jobs as developers is to go, right, how are we going to build this journey with all of that stuff in it, and making sure that that stuff happens at the right time. We don't put things in too soon. We don't get too competitive right at the beginning of the journey, but we don't leave stuff too late that we've got kids that aren't ready for first team football when it's required of them. I'd be interested in your experiences as a player, Malky. I'm pretty sure that your learnings came from the games where you lost and struggled and made mistakes, and actually the really nice games where you won were not the ones where you were developing and improving.
Massively, you know, from times of strife, when the resilient ones are the ones that get back up. I've touched on it a couple of times. I think I've talked about it on here in the book, The Talent Code, where they talk about that rage to master inside some youngsters. So, you know, when they talk about age maturation, some of the kids that aren't as developed are actually the ones that end up coming through. They have got this inner, you know, built thing inside them, this rage to master, that no matter what adversity that comes, they get up and they keep going. And there is so many. You look through even top players. I remember watching Michael Owen before a World Cup, absolutely flying in the league. Everything was, he touched, turned to goals. And then 2 weeks before the World Cup, he turns and does his cruciate, and his World Cup has ended. So even at all different age groups, at different levels, there are times where you think, I'd love to be him, and surely everything can't get any better. And then something just comes from the back and takes your legs away. One of the best things that I moved to England and 6-9 months after being in England at Norwich City, I wasn't playing, and I had a year on the bench and I hated it, and I wanted to come back home, and my wife wanted to come back home, and it was, let's get away from this as quick. And something turned, something changed, and I was in the team for the next 4 years and loved life down there and the games and everything about it. And there's times where you've got to dig in, and you talk to the young players, you know, at the moment, and you say there are going to be times where you've got to put the smile on your face and go in and work hard and train hard, and you're hating every minute of it, but you don't let it affect you. You don't let it affect your personality in there, but don't let it affect what you are as a person. And you treat people the same way, but what you do is you go and you work even harder on the pitch, and you show that to the coaches and the management. And if it's not there, you do it in a reserve game where there's a point where someone else might be looking at you, and the next minute there's a transfer to another club because of the attitude you showed in a bounce game somewhere. So no, there's so many things to be learned, more from resilience of failures than there is from people just keep telling you how great everything is.
Yeah. There is no smooth pathway, is there, Greg? And for players, for coaches in the room today, we've got coaches that, you know, obviously in our country, you've got the top clubs, Celtic, Rangers, you've got other coaches in the room that are then hearing from them, learning from them, and there is a whole host of approaches to it and ways of working. None are right, none are wrong.
And that's right. And every club will have those different resources and different challenges, and you know everybody works under those different parameters. So yeah, and it's as I always talk about as well, it's our job then in coach education to try and to kind of turbocharge that learning of everyone. So whether you're at a Stirling Albion, and I don't mean to demean any club, but whether you're a coach at Stirling Albion and a coach at Rangers, putting them together on a coach education course can be quite wonderful, because they then start talking about their different experiences and learning as much from each other, although they're maybe at different, you know, different ends of the scale in terms of resources that they're working with. So yeah, absolutely, in terms of coach education, it's good to get that melting pot of experiences. Yeah.
You've had a bit of a melting pot of experiences in your career, haven't you, Nick, in many regards, from Watford and the focus on youth and development through there. You spoke about your experience at Sheffield United, and I know they were quite different, weren't they?
Yeah, I think luck plays a big part in development of coaches and players, and I consider myself lucky to have had three really different sets of experiences across three clubs, which have spanned three top divisions in England, the three of the four categories of academy. We categorise academies 1, 2, 3 and 4. I've worked in the top three, worked under clubs with resource, without resource, with a plan, without a plan, with stable ownership, with no stable ownership. You wouldn't design your experience to look like that, but it's exactly the same as the journey I've just described for players. A melting pot of all this stuff, and it's stood me in quite good stead. I think the stuff you're alluding to at Sheffield United is probably around, at Watford we had opportunity by design, so we had a plan. We had a first team squad that was going to be shaped with young players factored into it, and so that bit was never an issue. It was just the pressure to make sure you got some kids to fill those slots. The Sheffield United model was different because Sheffield United pulling 30,000 fans every week in League One, passionate fans, there's a desperation to get out of that division. We were rattling through managers like there's no tomorrow. And there's not a manager in the land who would suddenly go, well, we'll just stick all the kids in. You've got to win, you've got to keep your job, you've got to survive, you've got to get promoted. So it became a little bit harder. So we talked about being creative and innovative, and that's not always driven by finance. It's about driven by being thoughtful and brave and trying new stuff. So we just had to find a way of bridging the gap from the youth team to first team, get kids out on loan, try and recreate competitive environments in-house, mix up our games programs, create environments where there's crowds, get to as many tournaments as we possibly can, throw kids into teams and divisions that they wouldn't have dreamt of going to play in. And that's tough because you've got to convince players and parents and agents that, hey, why don't you go and have a go at, no disrespect, Hallam FC is a wonderful club, so is Stocksbridge Park Steels, but no one in this room knows who they are, even though one of them is the oldest football club in the world. It's no, I correct myself. Sheffield FC is the oldest. Sorry, lads. Wow. Sheffield FC, wow. Oldest stadium. All right, but they're not places that kids were desperate to go and play at.
Yeah.
But what we did was, over the Christmas period, where there's no academy fixtures, get the whole youth team out on loan just so they can experience things like having to find their own way to an away fixture because there's no coach going, playing on Boxing Day, playing on New Year's Day. Playing three games in a week, playing for points, playing with other folk who desperately need the cash, playing with people who aren't the same age as you. All of that happens when you go out on loan. Kids have to go out on loan a couple of divisions below what they're capable of, because the manager isn't doing the kid a favour, he's doing himself a favour. He's picking a player that's going to help his team to win. So we just got kids out there and we had a reasonable amount of success, I think we highlighted earlier. Dom Calvert-Lewin went to Stalybridge Celtic, had a wonderful experience, and went from a player that potentially was never going to get a career to one that is having a career.
Playing well, yeah.
David Brooks would have been the same, went to Halifax, got sent home from his loan period at Halifax because he wasn't physically robust enough and wasn't going to help them win games.
So we just had to get inventive, and you know, whether those kids might have got there without that intervention, we'll never know. But it was, I think my message is, you've got to try everything. You've got to exhaust all opportunities so as that every kid you work with, you can at least look them in the eye and think, we did all we could, we did all we knew how to do, we explored every avenue, and if we supported you, great. And if it hadn't worked out for you, we didn't know what else to do. We tried everything we possibly could.
Yeah. Well, there's no one better around the table to speak to about that sort of pressure as a manager. There's no patience in football as a manager, is there? You need those results on a weekly basis. But if we look now at a national setup, where we maybe do need a bit more patience, is when we look at the development of our young players at the moment, the performance skills. And you spoke today, Malky, we're starting to see those roots bursting through now because of the process that we're going through as a national association.
Very much so, and it has absolutely got to be a collaboration between the clubs and ourselves as far as this is concerned. And Nick touching on that there, you know, the one a huge jump you see in them is when they do go out on loan, and then that test of, have we pitched them at the right level? Because sometimes they can go in at a level and it's too much for them. Yeah. And they need to go a division lower than that. And that then ego comes into that with parents as to, he's better than that. Well, they're going out there for certain reasons to be roughed up, for want of a better word, or to have an environment that's not quite as comfortable as what they're leaving. But sometimes they come back and the results are phenomenal. You know, you look, for example, last year, Zach Rudden, who's in Rangers Youth Reserves, they send him out to Falkirk and all of a sudden blows the doors off and scores 14, 15 goals, comes back to our national youth setup, and we go over to Portugal for the elite European rounds, and you know, it looks like a man playing against Turkey, scores a couple of goals, and just confidence oozing out of him. And these are the differences, you know, I touch on this a lot. Harry Kane had 5 loan moves before he put on a white jersey. Down at Tottenham Hotspur. 2 years ago, Scott McKenna, playing for our under-21s, couple of loan moves to Alloa, to Ayr United, goes back into the Aberdeen team, becomes a different player altogether, and the next minute's captain in the national team. So the foundations have got to be there, but that experience, when it's when you have to think about, right, we need to give these boys a test now, putting them in the reserves at that age, there's a time to put them in there, but then are they there too long? Is there an age we need to get them out and get them playing to test them to see are they going to be good for our first team? As far as the performance school kids are concerned, the ones that are coming through, we are going toe to toe now with various countries around Europe, and over the last 2 years now, the results speak for themselves. We've beaten England, France, Germany, Holland, Spain, Russia, Brazil, Uruguay in the last 2 years between 16s and 21s on one-off occasions, but it's ball retention as well, and you see how they're handling the ball. Now that's because we've had 10 years now of Greg and the likes preaching to our coaches about the amount of work that has to be done on the ball. But a lot of the other factors are coming together now as well in terms of tactically our coaches and what we've got to talk, where our coaches are actually going toe-to-toe with European coaches now and not having that inferiority complex, thinking, okay, we are actually beginning to actually show the green shoots of some of these results of these kids coming through. Clubs in England, clubs abroad, actually now looking up here at our young players and, you know, not being 20 to 25-year-olds that we're selling 16 to 20-year-olds. Our clubs now looking at that and offers coming in for them. Whether they sell, it's another matter, but you know, in the last 2 years, we've now sold Billy Gilmour from Rangers to Chelsea. And within the last month, it looks as though Liam Morrison is moving from Celtic to Bayern Munich. Yeah. Wow. You know, and 13 of the 14 that have gone in the last 3 years have come out of the performance schools. So it looks, you know, that we've got to keep looking at those top 5 leagues in Europe and thinking, you know, can we export to if the club wants to sell? Because what it does is it brings money back into the Scottish game, and you hope that a slice of that is then invested back into the academies to allow them to, you know, create more and more opportunities for the coaches and the players to go through to first team, so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
There's not much more that makes a coach proud than seeing stuff like that, is there, Greg? And from you guys to see the work that the coaches are doing and the knock-on effect that's building Must be proud.
No, but even as Malky's talking there, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, coaches getting that, you know, that extra experience. You know, David Moyes, for example, came and spoke about his experience of coaching at Real Madrid, you know, and Malky's talking about players going to get that experience. Nick's talked about players going to get experience, added experience elsewhere, not in what may have become the comfort zone at that club that they're used to and they've maybe been brought up in. And I think that holds for the coach as well. You know, the coach can go and get further experience elsewhere. So back to my David Moyes example, you know, he spoke about how he thought he grew as a person even going to Real Sociedad. You know, and he impressed on us that, you know, every coach should learn a language. You know, and that's part of our pro licence, as many people will know. So learning a language is part of our pro licence course to try and help those coaches become all the words we've used, become a little bit more robust, become a little bit more employable, become a little bit, you know, of a better skill set to make them more, I kind of use the phrase as being more match ready for when they become a, you know, a graduate from that pro licence course. But alongside that, you know, there's, and I'm constantly saying to coaches on a B licence or an E, like, go and knock the door at other clubs and try and get that experience. And I'm back to that one earlier, you know, other clubs will be entrepreneurial, if you like, they'll be looking for that added help and assistance. You know, our clubs are always looking for coaches. My phone every second day is a text from my head of academy, a head of youth, Greg, do you know any coaches that might be interested in a role taking our under-13s? Who's come through the coach? You know, and it's that thing about get those added experiences to further your own development.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned early in this podcast, Nick, was a connection between Man United and Scotland. We've seen it throughout with coaches, with players. At the moment, from your position, obviously you'll be looking in from afar, but you see the exciting prospects at the moment in Scotland, some young players coming through. It does look bright, doesn't it, for young Scottish players and young Scottish coaches looking onwards?
Absolutely it does, yeah. And I think people outside of the country are looking in, knowing that there's some different stuff going on here and that there's exciting times ahead. Everybody is always trying to find the best talent they possibly can, so it raises everyone's awareness of potential talent that could move. I've got an interesting perspective, I think, on movement of players, having been on both ends of the deal, as it were. So at Sheffield United, we lost kids to bigger clubs, and I was really personally offended that we were losing them. And I did all I could to try and keep hold of them, and I thought I could take on the big boys. And what I did was, I kind of ended up in a no-win situation, when actually what I had was a golden opportunity. So it's interesting listening to Malky there. I can hear you. I can talk freely, but I sense that there's this whole, should we be selling kids? Should we not be selling kids out of the country? Because it's not my politics, I can probably talk about it. But I just look at Manchester United now, and now we're obviously the slightly bigger club, yeah. And you're trying to bring players to the club from elsewhere. And I realised that sitting in my seat at Sheffield United, I could never compete. So what I should have been doing, and if I could go back and have my time again, you talk about mistakes, what I should have been doing is going, these players are going to move. These are life-changing opportunities. They are going, no matter what I do. And actually, if I'm a genuine developer of young people, I should want them to move. Yeah. It's in their best interest. Now you've got the financial issue, haven't you, as you want to sell kids as a club when they're at their greatest value. And at Watford, that was a model. We wanted to hold on to players until they reached their maximum potential. We'd sell them when we thought their embedded value had been kind of realised. So you want to sell at the right time for a club. But stick all the finances to one side. Think about player development. You should really want your players to be better than your own team. And for every club, there's a bigger, better one, bar one club in the world, right? So you should want your players to move. The opportunity I missed was an opportunity for collaboration. I should have used that opportunity to go and speak to other clubs and say, hey, you're taking this player from us. We've done a great piece of work for you. Can we work with you? What can you do for us? How can we help? Can we get some fixtures? Can we share some ideas? Can we get some coach education opportunities going? Can we come and visit you? And I, because I was so desperate to protect the talent, I actually probably didn't serve my own organisation as well as I could have done. If I'd built a relationship and collaborated, which is what today's been about, right? Collaboration, knowing your place in an ecosystem, understanding that we can't survive on our own. There'll always be someone bigger, there'll always be someone smaller, we've got to work together. If I'd done that, you know what, you take our best player, we've still got our best player, and that best player is still going to fulfil his potential and potentially play in our first team, but I could add all this other nice stuff, as well as the finance that would have come that would have kept the chairman happy. I could add all this great sharing of best practice, great knowledge share, and I didn't. I turned that opportunity down because I was being stubborn. That's my perspective. You didn't ask for my opinion on that, but you got it. There you go.
Well, that's why we've got you around the table. That's what we want to hear. But Malky, we're talking about that more. Players going abroad, we want to see them playing at the highest level regardless. That'll be why you take coaches around Europe to learn from different people as well. It's all the same, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's not any different. What Nick's talking about with players, that you should hope for success for them. It's the same with coaches. Yeah. You know, you've got coaches working for you, and you know, it's a very insecure manager, I think, or manager of people, that keeps people down, that keeps pushing people down. When they're clearly got talent, you should make people run about you flourish, makes the organisation a better place, actually makes your job easier and makes people think you're really good. But as far as they're concerned, you should love when someone comes to you and says, I've got the opportunity to move to wherever, and you quite clearly look at it and it's a fabulous opportunity for them. You should drive them there. You should say, well done you, and you should be succession planning underneath them. And it shows that your organisation is doing something right. It shows that you're hiring correctly. As far as players are concerned, on a personal note for the Scottish FA, for our country, for our young players to have the best opportunities and experiences possible, is what I love to see. So if that is them and their family deciding that we're going to stay at that club because they see a pathway through to that first team, to play in the first team at the youngest age possible, and be comfortable in that first team and grow and develop there. If that's what they think is right, and they see something at that club and they're told something and there's actions towards that show that there's a path for him for the first team, great. If it's about, I want to go and try another experience in another country, and the family are believing in that, and the club buy into that, that's the way it should go as well. Because, for example, Harvey Sinclair decided to go off to Venezia. Liam Henderson decided to go off to Verona. As I say, Billy's gone down to Chelsea. We've got others at Wolves, at Leeds, at Norwich. This latest one to Germany, off the back of, I think, European clubs now looking to the UK. And initially, it was the young English players who... this huge swathe of young English talent that's come through, that has now hit the glass ceiling, that can't get break into Premier League clubs, first teams on a Saturday. So there's 30% of English playing in the English Premier League right now, which is not good enough. Well, they see that being blocked, and then foreign clubs coming in and saying, the top five leagues in Europe, going, well, you're good enough for us. And that's been seen by, you know, as an ex-prodigy, a next day, Jadon Sancho, who's now blown the doors off by Borussia Dortmund. If we've got now players that people are looking at and being attracted to, when we're showcasing them in Europe, or whether clubs are going to tournaments and showcasing them, and you're getting European clubs deciding to come and give our young players new experiences, that's something very new for us, but it's something that's only going to make our national teams better. And I can't stress enough about experiences for young players, new and fresh experiences for young players, because you go into a different environment and it's challenging, but you stick it out, and then you end up, a lot of them raise themselves to that level. And the experiences of Liam Morrison's going to have over in Munich, my God, you know, the world is his oyster at the moment.
You must echo those sentiments from a coaching perspective as well, Greg.
Yeah, I'd be interested in Nick's point of view on this point, because we've had Paul McGuinness up previously, works obviously at Manchester United, and you do a lot of, Malky's talking about having to leave to get those mixed experiences, I suppose, but I think within your club, I'm right, you believe a lot in mixed age play and giving the kids a lot of experience. And I've read recently about, you know, Rashford talking about, you know, learning in the cage during that mixed age play and things like that as well. So they're experiences you can provide within the club.
Yeah, so we've always had quite a high profile summer at our club with a lot of young players in the first team, some debuts back end of last season, and all of that work precedes me.
Yeah,
some of the forefathers of, you know, Tony Whelan, who's still at the club, Paul McGuinness, they're the people that have created an environment that has help those boys to reach reach that place. But Paul was huge on all the stuff I've talked about today, which is about how do we stop academies from looking sterile and how do we make them look a little bit more like what we all used to do before academies were invented. So street games, mixed age groups, learning off your mates, learning off a big brother, teaching a little brother. So yeah, I think that it's a mixture of the both, isn't it? You've got to strive to try and make sure your own program is as diverse as possible and work out what experiences you can give your kids under your own roof. But then there's that element of trying to get out of your own bubble and see how you can then gain the variety by going places. Now, in an ideal world, that's taking teams to go and play in foreign competitions, trying to play more high profile games, play against different teams. So the challenge for us now is, okay, so European football's starting to look quite similar. How do we get our kids to South America? Because that's going to be the real shock for them. Because you go and play against South Americans, it's a different ball game altogether. And I don't necessarily mean technically, tactically, just gamesmanship. So that will be a challenge for us. Resource then becomes a bit of an issue, doesn't it? But you've got to go and hunt down all those opportunities. And I guess the ultimate is then some of the individuals within your programs will then earn the right to go and get their own move into those types of environments and go and explore the world for themselves. But a big one for me with taking your teams abroad to tournaments, to competitions, to training camps, is what it brings coach education wise as well. So I'm pretty sure if we nail a program that sees us play South American opposition regularly, the kids are going to have an experience, but the coaches are suddenly have all these brand new experiences that they've never faced before, and they've got to get back in the boot room and go, what do we do?
What's the solution?
How do we deal with that? Mm-hmm. And that's massive. That's a massive part of coach
absolutely
development.
Because we can talk all we like about it, but there's nothing more valuable than those experiences, is there, Mark?
Incredible. You know, our 21s have witnessed it in the last 2 years in Toulon, where we go to a top summer tournament and we manage to play countries from environments that we don't usually get access to. So last year, for example, they played, the group was France, Togo and South Korea. So in three completely contrasting games of football, the South Koreans, very technical, you know, playing in little triangles all over the pitch, but at times can be naive in other areas. The Togolese, strong, powerful, aggressive. You know, how do you beat them? Completely different way of having to beat the South Koreans, and then going up against the cream of the European team. Year before we played Brazil, 16s we played Uruguay. I'm conversations regularly with a friend who's working in South America at the moment, and the contrasting styles of the southern South Americans, Argentinians and the Uruguayans and the Paraguayans, who are used to inclement weather, tough training, tough people, to the northern South Americans, where the heat comes into it and there's a mañana style and it's very, very technical. And matching up against these teams as well, and these coaches, as you say, so you know the Toulon tournament, especially what you're coming up against on the other bench, how your experience is having to stay calm while someone's shoulder charge, and the next minute the guy's rolling about and their whole bench are on it. It's as if there's going to be a fight, a war. How do you stay calm within that? How do your players stay calm within that? It's given these international experiences to other parts of the world, where it is football, but it's slightly different, and the more that your players can learn and have more experiences, the better chance we've got of actually, when we then do get to tournaments that involve countries outside of Europe, we can handle them, and we don't go into them naive thinking, what have we come up against here?
You know, I remember years and years ago, I'm going back to a kind of previous lifetime, I used to be the liaison officer for Scotland under 21 teams, and I remember Frank Riley, who still works with us here in the Scottish FA, Frank phoned me and said, Greg, can you go and meet Bertie Vogts and Rainer Bonhoff in the hotel? So, right, okay, I'll go and meet them. So Rainer was the under 21 manager at the time, and Bertie was the full team manager, the first team manager. So, but what they were actually doing was working together in harmony to decide that with the under 21s that evening that I was looking after, they were playing Ghana, right. I think, at Palmerston in Dumfries. Yeah. And he wanted to take
After 70 minutes, regardless of the score, after 70 minutes he was taking Gary Caldwell off, and after 60 minutes I think he was taking James McFadden off, something like that. I was to then organise a car to get them immediately to Easter Road, or the, that was in the old days when the under-21s used to play on, you know, the Tuesday night, and the first team used to play on the Wednesday night, to get them then to Easter Road or wherever the team were staying, to then play Canada the following evening, but not play the full game. You know, Gary was to play, they had 20 minutes that he never played in the under-21 game, and James was to play the half hour. And of course, they get substituted on that Tuesday night, and it's, boo, but he doesn't know what he's talking about, but, you know, it's what Malky's talking about there. That was an opportunity that Bertie and Rayner have spotted to give them a further experience to enhance their development against teams, that's what they said, against teams they would normally play against, Canada and Ghana.
Massively, and we talked earlier on, you both talked about Paul McGuinness and stuff, and it's also given players challenges concerning age differences as well. So for example, we take Billy Gilmour, who at that point is just turned 17, as a wild card to Toulon. We took him as the wild card, playing against 20, 21-year-olds. Is this going to work? Well, within about 10 minutes of the training, the first training session with Scotland's under-21s, it was working all right. And the players themselves could see that this kid had actually was able to cope with the session, and not just cope, end up running the session. But physically, how would this work over there? How would it manifest itself against Togolese, South Koreans and the French? And it was a case of us, do we protect? At what point do we actually throw in? Myself and Scott again, we had a long conversation about this. You know, I'm throwing in that Eriksen played for Denmark at 18 years old, and we think highly of this kid. What do we do here? So we knocked it about. He was on the bench for the Togo game, and he came on for the last 10-15 minutes. And then again, we knocked it about. What will we do for the second game, which was the France game? And you know, you're thinking, and in the end we put him in for the France game against top European team, and physically strong and technical, and he went in and he actually, you know, it's no sink or swim, because we're taking the kid to protect and stuff, but at the end of the day, he didn't swim, he swam a mile, and played so well in the game. But can you fast track players that you think I've got the ability? Now, there's the balance between the physicality as to how big that gap is, but if we've got talent, can we fast track that talent? Can we put them into situations that they'll test them, but if they come through it, my goodness, their development's going to be huge. And we're certainly doing that with, you know, through the age group for 16 to 21. If they're good enough, they're going up an age group and they're going to be tested.
Is that how you would work at Manchester United then, when there's a player that you can clearly tell will benefit from going in, like you talked about, up an age level, do it, he'll flourish up there?
Absolutely. The challenge really is to have, for the 180 kids in the programme, 180 individual programmes. So if kids are comfortable, can you stretch them to the point where they find it difficult? But can you also give them an opportunity to bring them back to an environment where it's easy again? If kids are struggling, can you find an environment where it's easier just to help them get through whatever it is they're going through in terms of confidence or a growth spurt or just the simple nature that kids are up and down, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So you're constantly trying to sit with the coaches, sit with the support teams and work out, what do we do here? What's the intervention that this kid needs right now to help him? And at one end of the spectrum, the high flyers need stretch, they need challenge. But going back to some of the messages that we shared this morning, talent ID is complex and talent looks peculiar at times. So in your mind, you've also got to have your eye on that unorthodox talent, the late developer, the steady Eddie, the one that's in the shadows, that's chipping away and having to graft to survive, because quite often they're the ones that get there in the end. So you've got to have your eye on both of those, knowing that high flyers, if they don't experience adversity, sometimes don't end up with the skills to deal with the end game. Yeah. And reminding yourself that route one, superstar at seven that ends up superstar in the first team, is a once in a generation exception to the rule, right? So Owen, Giggs, Rooney, yeah. Rashford arguably, they're the exception to the rule. Yeah. And then everybody else tends to look a bit more clunky, don't they? Dips, peaks, troughs, hiding on the shoulder of the one that was really talented, and then they arrive into the limelight when it really matters, right at the end of the journey. You've got to kind of facilitate that journey somehow. So it's that constant battle of what environment does this kid need at this moment in his journey. It's and there's no right or wrong, is there? It's guesswork sometimes.
We're talking about the elite level of the game, and what would your advice be, Nick, for, you know, there's a lot of people hopefully listening to this that are involved only in the grassroots side of the game. So what would your advice be to them? Is it just play?
And I have a go at that just to keep myself sane and to keep myself connected. I'd run the village team, yeah. And for me, at that end of the spectrum, even at the elite end of the spectrum, but at that end, it's about kids who are desperate to play, and for me, it's about give everybody as many minutes as you possibly can to fall in love with the game, yeah. And to give them an environment that they're in love with, so that they have a lifelong participation. Whether that be then as a coach or an official or just as a spectator or playing five-a-side with their mates, you've got to kind of light the fire that makes them fall in love, keeps them in love. And for me, that's about lots of minutes, lots of exciting games, no setbacks, no disappointments, a really nice, healthy environment. But I don't see that being too dissimilar on the elite program with the younger age groups. It's a crime if kids aren't playing games. We got to get clever with the way that we structure our programs to make sure that every kid has a game. Because the end of it all, we don't actually know. Talent isn't, there's no science to talent,
no, there's no
right?
reason, is there really? Yeah.
Trying to identify talent, it gets easier as they get older, but at a young age, it's opinion and it's a little bit of guesswork, and we just don't know. So you might as well treat them all as if they could be the one. And then everyone has a great experience, and then we touched on it again. Remember that it's not just about technical tactical, it's about the whole person and making sure that the whole person thrives. Because actually, if you have a person who's thriving, the technical tactical ends up taking care of itself. If they become a footballer, great, that experience is one that's propped up their performance. If they don't become a footballer, then your intervention as a football coach for the grassroots team or for the academy team should be an amazing addition to their childhood, yeah. That they remember forevermore. And they see that experience as, hey, that was a positive one, that enriched my life. There's no excuse to not deliver that to every kid, regardless of ability.
I was, afterwards, was lucky enough to speak to a few of the heads of academy from the clubs, Malky, that we were speaking about at the end. And even these experienced guys that have been doing their jobs for however long were saying there's always something you can take. You said it yourself, Nick, there's always something you can learn from this. I could sit around this table with you guys all day and talk about this. It's fascinating to listen to, but unfortunately, we do probably have to wrap up soon enough. But when there is something you take from today, Malky, yourself, someone as experienced as you, what do you take from what you saw today and sitting around this table?
What I take is sitting looking at the 80-odd faces today, because I can sit detached from it a little bit. I know Nick well, and you know, we've spoken a lot about thoughts in football. I can sit and look at the faces of the guys that are in there today and see light bulbs coming on all over the place. You know, when he talks about his own journey, when he talks about the players, I think I love the humility that pours from him, from someone who's in that sort of job, who's had that many experiences now in football, that I see someone with a humility and a desire to pass over information and again not think it's keeping things quiet and keeping things close to himself, being out there and imparting as much information as he can to coaches to help them, and the humble nature that the way that he put it across, and I think that absolutely shone through from today. That they're getting knowledge from the very, very top, and they're not being spoken at; they're being discussed with, and that's where I see all these faces, and I see nods, and I see people writing things down all over the audience, and I think that nothing else today. That it was a real educational day for an awful lot of coaches in Scotland, and if that is what's produced from today, that'll do me fine.
And what struck me was when you opened the floor for questions. Hands everywhere. Oh, like it was, everybody wanted to pitch in, they wanted to get involved. You could take that from.
We could have been there for another couple of hours. Nick could have ended up having 10 people queuing outside to grab them individually. I know a few did. There's time restrictions, like everything, but you've got a group of people there who will be phoning each other, talking about it. our next Pride Lab, it will be we will debrief this, and we will get their learnings from this as well and their thoughts from this as well. But I just see eyes. I see eyes with fire in them, and I see light bulbs going all over the room as far as they're concerned. And that's what makes today a real worthwhile experience for me.
Greg, what about yourself? What do you take from it?
Everything Malky said and more. If I was to take real one nugget, it was just something Nick said about, you know, if I've got my coach education hat on for a second, and that one was that, you know, we're not bad. We're not bad at teaching or helping the coach learn about what to coach and how to coach. But Nick mentioned earlier about that kind of game management, and I think we do need to do more about that or with that in coach education. So that, how did I set up the game day environment for the player, and how did I let the player flourish in that game day environment? So it's not just about the training session. You know, the training session might be two or three nights a week if they're lucky enough to get the children or the players that amount of times. But, you know, we probably do, and Nick alluded to it earlier on, we probably do neglect the game day environment, you know, from the moment that the coach wakes up in the morning. What are they doing to produce the best environment they can then for the players? How are they feeding back to the players during the game? Are they feeding back at all? What are they doing pre-game, post-game, and everything else that goes alongside that? So there's another big part of learning there that we need to, the courses went now from 120 hours to 240 hours.
No, it was fascinating to listen to you, Nick, and great to have you around the table. And I guess to round off, we're talking about these things that we can all learn. You mentioned it yourself. When people look at Manchester United at the moment, they must look at someone in your position, the academy, the youngsters that are in around the team. You've got Rashford, Lingard, Mason Greenwood in and around there. So many exciting things. That gives you a challenge moving forward. And you mentioned it yourself, that challenge you've got coming up ahead must be one that you're relishing.
Yeah, it's daunting as well, because Manchester United is the best environment in the world for developing young people. Those players that are in the first team, we're really proud of. I've caught the tail end of their journey, but really that's the work of people over the last 10, 15, 20 years. The challenge is, how do we replicate that? How do we keep that going? So it's exciting. It's definitely an honour. And it's a little bit daunting as well. We've got to find a way of, in a modern world, keeping that going. And we won't keep it going by doing what we did 10 years ago. We'll keep it going by doing something slightly different, the modern version of what we used to do. But there are some principles and there are some concepts that we need to preserve that have stood the test of time. And you've got to add to that, and you've got to innovate, and you've got to try and find the competitive edge. So it's going to be good fun trying. And I'll chip in as well, just in terms of learnings from the day. Mine are, it was more of a reminder just about how important collaboration is. So I think the Pride Labs are an unbelievable concept. I don't think football clubs can survive in isolation. You're part of an ecosystem. If nothing else, you need an opponent to play against. But more than that, you need a group of clubs to try and work with to achieve a common goal. So fiercely competitive, but actually you've got to collaborate as well to be competitive. And then from the point of view of individuals and coaches, the only way I think you get better is collaboration, sharing ideas, and just that constantly reminding yourself that we haven't got all the answers. What I've shared today is a set of opinions. It's not fact, it's not the answers, but I'm happy to put it out there, because I know by putting it out there, some people will give me some feedback on it, and some of that feedback might just be the bit that makes me challenge my own set of beliefs and tweak some stuff. And over time, you kind of refine it and bulletproof it. So collaboration is so important.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover. And to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.